All right, y'all, welcome back to the War Room. I'm here with my co-hosts, Bert and Thomas. And gentlemen, we got some news around the time of 11 a.m. this morning that made me hit the big red button and say, boys, assemble, assemble the team. We got to get a pot off because the Texans, as of 11 a.m. in the year of our Lord on April 3rd, 2024, have acquired Stephon Diggs for a, well, ham sandwich. Pretty much. It's the reverse of the D-Hop trade from 5 years ago, guys, and broke the internet, came completely out of the blue. And this is shortly after Shaq Mason restructures his contract majorly to free up a lot of cap space here. Boys, is the championship window open? Is it official?
It was open. I think it's been open. I mean, if the free agency a couple weeks ago wasn't any indication of that, I mean, now it's you're screaming from the mountaintops to come take it.
I mean, yeah, I feel like previously it was like a little ajar, and then this deal just kicked down the door.
Well, I mean, the problem is I don't think until Kansas City proves that they're not the team anymore, I don't think you can give anybody really the title of being the go ahead. But I mean, talk about making a freaking attempt at it. I mean,
yeah,
damn.
Yeah.
My exactly. question is who has a better offense? Player. I know we have the dummies in Kansas City, but for player on paper, who has a better team? I mean, I feel like we're neck and neck with O-line. With Kansas City, obviously tight end and quarterback, they'll take that. But receivers, I mean, you saw Trayvon Diggs tweet saying we have three number ones. Not to mention we have Noah Brown, who came from Dallas. We have Xavier Hutchinson. Yeah, the Iowa State product. And then we still have John Mechie. Like, we're like eight deep. We're eight deep. And this is the star that CJ Stroud needed to take it to the next level. Is Diggs gonna have his stuff? Yes. Like every other probably top three receiver. I mean, Tyreek Hill had his stuff. I mean, Devontae Adams had his stuff in Green Bay. Financially, I mean, we were looking at getting Mike Evans this offseason.
Yep.
I would much rather have Diggs than Mike Evans, if I'm going to be completely honest with you.
I think they're two different styles of receivers, but I mean, at this point, for what we paid for Diggs compared to what we would have had to pay in raw salary, I mean, look, let's just back up a minute here. In regards to what we actually had to give up for Diggs, right, Yeah, 2025 second rounder. 2025 second rounder for Diggs, and along with Diggs, we get a sixth and a seventh rounder for this year, I believe.
Fifth and a sixth.
Fifth and a sixth or whatever. But look, here's the big thing, guys. Here's the big picture, right? We have to acknowledge the crazy buildup that's happened in just about 2 years of what Nick Caserio has done, right?
So less than 365 days.
Let's go through memory lane of two off seasons of work from Caserio, right? Somehow Nick Caserio basically turned the 23rd pick of the 2024 draft into Stephon Diggs, the 42nd pick of this draft, a sixth round pick of this draft, and a fifth round pick in the 2025 draft, while also moving up from pick 232 to pick 188 in this draft. And we still have round two, pick 42 from Minnesota, round two, pick 59, round three, pick 86, round four, pick 123 from Cleveland, round four, pick 127, round six, pick 188 from Minnesota, round six, pick 204 from Buffalo, round seven, pick 338 from New Orleans, and round seven, pick 247. Along with that, guys, we have to keep in mind the ultimate there's two more points of the just the ultimate conclusion that kind of summarizes what just happened, right? this was the first time in regards to just this offseason alone ever that a team has acquired players whose previous seasons is 1,000 yards receiving, 1,000 yards rushing, and 10 sacks amongst three players, or really just in their entire offseason acquisitions.
Just go ahead and round it up to 15 sacks, why don't you? Because he had 16 and a half last season.
Yep. So basically, the Texans rebuild, as Sean Pendergast put it very eloquently, can be summed up in two simple steps. Because everyone's wondering, how did the Texans do this so quickly? How were they able to rebound and turn themselves into a contender so quickly, relatively, right? It was painful, but relatively. Step one, flip the QB getting sued by 25 women for 7 draft picks. Step two, draft CJ Stroud. You know, very repeatable. Very repeatable.
Wait, you have to have your prereq to that is have a head coach who doesn't want the number one pick and throws a Hail Mary for a touchdown at the end of the season to drop us to number two.
That's true. It's very important. Yeah, that was very key. The statue of Lovey needs to happen for that one deal. I mean, that was just I don't know what kind of other explanation for divine intervention in a football team. Yeah.
Dumb luck. I mean,
just ridiculous, guys. So, Bert, I've got a question for you, buddy. And that, Thomas, I'm going to go to you for a follow-up. So the first question I've got for you, Bert, is the first thing in my mind when I see the Texans making these aggressive moves so early, especially in regards to the acquisition of Stroud and his rookie contract, the first thing in my mind is like, this is reminding me of what the Cowboys were trying to do within the years of 2016 and 2019 under Dak Prescott's rookie contract.
I think a better example would be Joe Burrow and the 2021 Bengals.
There you go.
That's a better example.
Well, and you know what? That's a fair point, except we haven't seen the Bengals. Like, the Bengals, all of their talent, for the most part, has been drafted, right? With the exception of Mixon. Well, maybe they drafted him, but they didn't make a bunch of acquisitions after getting Joe Burrow, for the most part. They mainly just kept guys.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm talking about in regards
there's a difference.
We have a rookie quarterback, right? And we've got about 3 or 4 years before he's really going to get paid. Now, in regards to comparing Dak and CJ's spot in their careers, Dak was an extreme, right? He was a fourth round pick. He's making $680K a season, whereas CJ Stroud is making 36 over 4 years, or 36 million, right? Mm-hmm. So much more expensive rookie contract, but still a rookie contract that gives you a lot of salary cap. And you know, once you hit that 4 year mark, you're going to have to open up a lot of cap space, and you may have to get rid of some of these Lamborghinis in the shed. So do you think that? This is the only question I have for you, Bert, because you've kind of seen this play itself out from 2016 onwards with the Cowboys as you followed that with Dak. Do you think that this is more just a simple, positive light of, hey, now the championship door is really, really open? Or on the negative side, do we also have to consider, hey, well, maybe this puts a timestamp on how long we have to win a championship, that we have pretty much about 3 years?
I don't necessarily. I definitely don't think that's the case. I think with CJ Stroud at quarterback, let's say in the next 4 years, you sell off the Lamborghinis, right? Mm. That championship window is still going to be open. You've seen that with Patrick Mahomes over these past couple of years as well.
Great point.
When you have CJ Stroud and you have the quarterback, let's boil it down to this, right? Today's game of football is really based off of two things. The head coach and the quarterback. If you can nail those two positions on your team, you're going to have longevity success. You can structure your whole entire team around that one player. So I would go ahead and lean towards, while we have all these Lamborghinis in the garage right now, with the contract and the rookie contract, absolutely. There's no reason not to go out and get these types of players. But as, the salary, or as the contracts, become a little bit bigger and CJ starts eating away at that cap space, well, that's where Nick Casario is going to get tested again. It's how do we manage, veteran talent with rookies and draft picks. And again, it's a great option to look at what Kansas City has done. Use that as a go-by.
Yeah, absolutely. Thomas, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, so this is really interesting because what we have right now with this team, we've locked in for, let's say, 2 seasons conservatively. Because we have Diggs until he's 34, locked up for another 4 years. We just re-signed Joe Mixon. He's only 27. We re-signed our O-lineman. I mean, we have Tom Sewell, Shaq Mason, Jude Scruggs, who's coming off of a rookie season, Tytus Howard, who we locked up, CJ for another 3-4 years is on a rookie contract. And to your point, between Dak and CJ, it's a value thing. It's like, yeah, you pay more, but you get way, like, I think we could all unanimously agree CJ had the best rookie season ever of a quarterback.
Yeah,
and you're records. Only paying him $7 million a year, $8 million a year.
$36 million spread over 4 years, so comes out to
roughly whatever.
Yeah,
this is sports, not math. Yeah. So, but you look at a player who was in the MVP conversation for $8 million a year at some point this season as a rookie. You run into that, but by the time CJ's up for an extension, Anderson's up for an extension, those big time players, Diggs will be gone by then because he'll be 34. So you don't have to worry about that. And they're already going to be thinking that in drafting. I mean, you have Tank Dell, you have Nico Collins. So it's not going to be a huge hit. I mean, you're already deep. And if you win a Super Bowl, heck, if you go back-to-back and win 2 Super Bowls, so it's not getting crazy now. But, you know, with how Houston is, you can say that, baby. But
we've been starving.
That is what's going to draw players in. I mean, you're going to get off the cap hit for Diggs, Hunter, Tunsil's contract will be up by then. All these big-time players that you're paying, their contracts will be up. They'll be older. So you're already going to draft new talent to come in, right? So I don't think it's as big of a deal to think about because of the structure. But let's think about this. Let's think about the trade. Caserio ended up getting a 5th and a 6th-round pick. We ended up getting Hutchinson in the 7th round, who's been, whenever he's on the field and gets the ball, has been a good playmaker, which was a steal. And he managed to get a top 3 receiver, arguably, in the league, who's still in his prime, locked up on a contract for a 2nd-round pick. That's not even our pick.
Yep.
That is a pick of another team trying to make the playoffs.
Yep.
So, we look at that. He still has all of his picks. So, you didn't give up anything crazy. I mean, you can still draft, so you can load up for the future while still competing. So, like Bert said, it kind of extends that window. Like Mahomes, you're going to have all the flashy guys leave in the next couple of years after getting paid. Then you're going to be able to bring in new guys with CJ already 3-4 years into the league with more experience. Will Anderson being probably one of the top edge rushers. Having a O-line who is going to be one of the top for years to come. You know, it's stuff like that. And then you're going to have Nico Collins hopefully still there. Tank Dell still there. Maybe Mechie or Hutchinson. You know, it just depends. And then you're going to have Al Shazier on the defense. You know, I think this could be like a leaving one, like current era, and entering it into another era with CJ Stroud as that guy. Kind of like you said, like Patrick Mahomes with when you have Tyreek Hill and whatnot.
So the best way to put it is with these current players that we've just brought in, I would say that the championship window is probably 2 to 3 years with how things are structured right now.
Yeah.
Beyond that, that's when you start having to play, all right, you know, it's a little bit harder now. How are we going to manage these chess pieces? Mm-hmm. And that's, I guess you can say, give the Chiefs their credit. I mean, they did that last year and they won a Super Bowl. So,
yeah,
again,
they did a great job at managing that. And somehow they managed to pay Chris Jones big money and still keep him around and still have and a decent roster.
You have to look at it from this perspective. The game is, and I think this is why I was hearing people talk about this. This is why they kind of traded Diggs from Buffalo to, like, besides all the relationship stuff and whatnot, is that the Bills learned how to play without him the last 8 weeks of the season. I mean, Josh Allen was killing it, and Diggs' production went down because they knew how to win without him, you know? And that's kind of what happened with Tyreek Hill. I think Diggs, Collins, Schultz, and all of them will be good for development, but with how you can structure a team with a quarterback who's especially MVP caliber, you can transition from those flashy star players to getting good players, not like you can maybe spend $10, $15 million on a receiver per year, get a couple of them, you know, get your Nico Collins, is like talent level wise, your Nico Collins, your Tank Dell, before they develop again, take another step forward. Maybe get your 1,000-yard receiving guys, like Tyler Boyd is a good example. You know, get a couple of those guys around them to make your receiving core deep, and get a good O-line and a good running game. And you don't need these flashy receivers. I mean,
you know, I think you,
I was about to say, I was listening to several, you know, different takes on the whole Diggs thing. You don't necessarily need a true number one wide receiver to win a Super Bowl. It's been proven. I mean, all those years with Tom Brady last year.
I mean, I would just say, look at the Chiefs from this last year, right? I mean, of the top five receivers, you know, in the NFL, how many of those were on that Chiefs team? I mean, it was a running joke. They had no one to throw to.
You had Kelsey, but I mean,
yeah, but receivers, not tight ends. But yes, you had Kelsey.
The receivers, exactly. And you're looking at it. I think, don't get me wrong, having one of those guys, having those dudes is fantastic. But you have to look at it from a strategic standpoint of the money. And whenever I think Diggs, this is where it's going to be really cool. Diggs is going to open up a lot of options for CJ to grow. Like he did, like, let's look at how he grew with Josh Allen. You know, who is, again, I was listening to takes and thinking about it. I'm like, who was Josh Allen before Diggs? He wasn't in any MVP conversations or any Pro Bowls. He lost the Texans in the wild card. That's it. So I think this, one, I think the leadership in Houston with D'Amico and CJ is going to control all the mess of Diggs and all the baggage he brings. I think this is where you can see CJ, instead of having like a sophomore slump a little bit, take that huge leap like Burrow did or Mahomes did, you know? And, you know, I just think as a development thing, this is going to be perfect for him. For Diggs, it's going to be an opportunity to where he's not going to get doubled a lot because you're going to have Nico Collins and Tank Dell. And then you're going to have, if you try to stack the box or try to bring all your safeties and corners up to defend the pass, you're going to have your run game on another level this year.
With Mixon.
Not to mention, you could dump it off to Mixon and he's gone.
Like yeah, that is one of the main things with Mixon is the fact that you're getting a running back as your starter that is a threat both in the rushing and the receiving game. And if you look at some of the backs that are getting paid and where the value of running backs nowadays is going, it's not to the traditional guys that got brick hands as running backs. And all they do is run the ball, right? You look at the guys who are getting paid like McCaffrey, you know, and now what we're seeing with Mixon, you've got to be able to do it on both ends of the field, right? You've got to be able to do it in regards to being a receiving threat out of the backfield or even in the slot. I mean, McCaffrey was catching stuff out of the slot in the playoffs. You've got guys like Debo Samuel who literally will play both positions of running back and slot receiver. It's pretty incredible.
To go to your point, we were targeting Saquon this whole time. Like, it was almost like a lock. No. And when you look at it, how Saquon went to the Eagles for $12 million per year, we re-signed Mixon for $9 million. We saved $3 million a year for a player who's the same age and does the same exact thing, maybe to a little lower of a – not maybe not as good as Saquon, but he was in an offense where you had Jamar Chase, where you didn't have to rely on him. You had Chase, Higgins, Boyd. I mean, you had a lot of guys there to where he didn't have to be that – number one receiver and number one running back, number one tight end, number one blocker for a trash quarterback, you know? So to get Joe Mixon, which again, like right there, I think that's fair. Joe Mixon's down here, Saquon's up there, where you get a $3 million almost pay cut for like, I would say 1A, 1B in the caliber or S tier, A tier.
So here's what I would say about comparing the Mixon versus Saquon debate.
Let Bird talk because he's literally about to explode.
Well, my next question is for him. No, so I want to wrap up the Mixon thing, and then the next question is going to Bert. So to finish off with Mixon before we transition a little bit, I got one more question on Diggs for Bert. So on Mixon, I would argue that Mixon is the better fit for this offense, especially since we were more of a pass first last year. And that was kind of by force as we had some injuries to our offensive line. And also, and just a lot of young guys for the start of that last season when we had Tytus Howard out as well. Here's the main thing I would say. Yeah, Kenyon Green, I mean, that didn't even make it past preseason. That's going to be interesting. When we get Dylan Delgado back on the show, shout out, friend of the show, Texans insider for Texans County. When we get him back on the show, hopefully soon, that's going to be one of the questions I want to hear about from him from his insider perspective is what is Kenyon Green looking like? Is he going to be a guy that can contribute next year? Or is he someone that, you know, may end up truly being, you know, kind of just a backup? But anywho, in regards to Mixon versus Saquon, I argue that Mixon is the better fit because of the fact that Mixon's a better threat out of the backfield and Saquon is really more of just a traditional ground and pound running back. And yes, he can catch the ball, but he's not as flexible as Mixon as far as being that big of a reception threat. So that's my argument in regards to, look, not only did we get a guy who doesn't put any limitations on our offense in regards to, hey, if we go more pass heavy, he can still contribute. And we don't have to take him off to make it, you know, a more pass heavy situation work, but also we get the pay cut, right? $3 million per year difference there. That's precious cap space. So let me transition here and go finish up the Diggs talk.
Don't forget about Damian Pierce as well.
And that's the more run first guy. So sorry, I was getting to you, but I had this question lined up for you. So yes, Damian Pierce, he's going to be the guy to watch in regards to, hey, if we go with a more ground and pound style for whatever situation, whether we're trying to run the clock out or we're just trying to wear the other team down and give our number one Mixon some breaks. Pierce, I mean, he's a guy who had 1,000 yards in his rookie season, or was on pace for it, rather. So, you know, he had a sophomore slump, and we knew he was going to be the most affected of pretty much anybody on the offense going from the new from his rookie year to his sophomore year, and with the big offensive change. You know, he's a guy that loves to run through people instead of around them. And the style of a run game we switched to from going from that classic West Coast offense to kind of more the slashing and dashing. You know, a lot of quick hitting stuff, you know, wide zone, run combinations we were running in our more pass first offense we switched to last year was really going to hurt him, because if you try to run through people, you're missing the gap. There's smaller gaps to run through. It wasn't necessarily his best offense, and he had to really make some adjustments. So Bert's 100% right. We need to watch Damian Pierce going into this next season with a better offensive line that maybe will allow us to be a little more balanced. He's definitely someone to watch. But Bert, my main question for you is, when we're talking about adding Diggs into a lineup that already has Tank Dell and Nico Collins, two very, very talented guys that are capable of handling high volumes, do you think we're going to have any kind of a volume issue amongst these three guys in regards to being able to use them effectively? I mean, we've seen this kind of situation be great, right, with many teams, and we've seen this kind of situation turn into a trash can on fire like it did with the Cleveland Browns. I mean, you think about how they got Jarvis Landry and Odell Beckham together, and they had a couple of good tight ends to go with that, Austin Hopper, whatever his name is, along with David Njoku. That receiving core somehow didn't work. So we know it can be really good, or it can be really, you know, really bad to have this many Lamborghinis in a shed per se. So do you see any potential issues on the horizon in making that work, or are you just 100% on board?
I think it's going to depend on Stephon Diggs. The question with his time in Buffalo was he was struggling with Josh Allen in touches, right? Josh Allen wasn't giving him the ball. Therefore, Stephon Diggs was upset, and he used Twitter as a, exactly, you know. So that's the question, right? And I don't think we're going to be able. We could sit here and talk, but we're not going to actually get an answer until we see what games look like. I will say a big key, I think, in all that is going to be D'Amico. You know what? When D'Amico sits with Stephon for the first time, I'm assuming probably here either tomorrow or Friday. What is D'Amico going to establish with him? Is he going to establish Stephon as, look, man, you are now a part of a team. You know, we love having you on this team to be that clear number one wide receiver, but you know, if you're not open, we're not going to get you the ball, right? You're going to get an opportunity to get those touches more so now with this team than you on the bike or on Vikings. More so with the Bills simply because there are more weapons around. But again, you have to prove to be a team player. I mean, that's part of the reason why I think the Texans have had all the success is the fact that everybody has grown up as really young players together, and now you're bringing in somebody else on top of that.
They also want in.
You need to D'Amico has to establish you are a team player with Stephon, or else it could very well explode.
Yeah, and that also comes on Bobby Slowick to make sure that you make an offense that gives everyone opportunities, right? You've got a three-headed monster you have to manage. And like I said, we saw – now, granted, this is with one of the worst offensive coordinators and head coach combos we've seen probably in this decade, 3 years ago, with that Browns team when they had all that stuff in there. They couldn't make anything work over there. They could have had prime Tom Brady and, you know, and Randy Moss and still crashed and burned, in my opinion, with how bad of a program they were running over there. But, you know, we've seen this go bad with the Browns. That's our exhibit A of how you can do it wrong. But, you know, from what we saw last year at Bobby Slowick, he got a lot of guys, a lot of touches across the board, especially when it came to rotating our number three guys between, you know, Hutchinson, Mechie, and then, of course,
Before Tank Dell got hurt, you were going to have 2,000-yard receivers.
Yeah.
He was at 709 by, like, week 13.
Yeah. With like five to seven games to go, he was on pace. Yeah, you're 100% right. So
had to play in 18 because we would have still been there with the Colts.
Yep. Now, yeah. So I think Bobby Slowick, with his experience, in regards to coordinating a passing game with a lot of, you know, key players and having multiple top tier targets. You think about his time with the 49ers doing, I mean, solely focusing on the passing game. I think he can handle it. It's a matter of, you know, I think he can draw up a good program to make that work, but can the receivers adapt to it? Right.
That's
the question.
The real question is, you know, how many years now has Stephon had, you know, 1,000-yard receiving like in a row?
Four straight.
Is he going to be able to put that ego aside? That's the real question.
I think also it could be a couple different things. One, I mean, he was in Buffalo. I mean,
oh, by the way, for Diggs, it's six straight since 2018. He said 1,000 yards.
I know it was four straight in Buffalo.
Straight Buffalo, and then two with the Vikings.
Okay, so you know, look at the change. One, he's a big family guy. You like the Diggs brothers and the Trayvon and Stephen are close, so he's gonna be 3.5 hours away from his brother. I mean, you're going to go to a place with no state income tax. I mean, the environment's going to be better. And if you look at how everyone bought in last season, I mean, that's what's attracting everyone is how everyone's buying in. So I think the situation's going to be a little different to where it would make more sense for Diggs to be like, okay, like maybe I do need to take a back seat so we can win a Super Bowl. I mean, he's still probably going to get 85, 90 catches for 1,000 yards minimum probably. I mean, but you see how the 49er offense was with Debo and Ayuk and Kittle and McCaffrey. I mean, you have all these weapons. I don't think it's a matter of him getting his touches. I think it's the matter of him buying in into the culture and into the system, which I think he will do, especially with the how close they are to a Super Bowl compared to where Buffalo was last year or the last couple of years.
So I have one other factor to kind of key into this while we're on this topic. So Nico Collins, I believe his contract is up at the end of this season, correct?
Yeah. I think you're right.
Or he might have a fifth-year option.
Okay. Regardless, you're looking at a receiver that's, you know, ending contract negotiations very soon. Having a Stephon Diggs come in might affect that relationship.
Yeah, so Bert, you are right. He'll be a free agent unless the Texans get a deal done in March of 2025.
Okay. So, again, a receiver that's very close to becoming a free agent, possibly, he's going to want touches. to get paid.
Yep. And Houston's got to get him his touches. We don't want him walking away over something like that.
Yeah.
I don't think it's a touch issue. I think it's a more of a will you buy in?
Well, here's the thing. For his first 2 years, right, it was a touches issue. I mean, we have this amazing 6'4", 226-pound athlete that runs a 4.41 40, right? Literally almost in regards to just physical stature alone, almost a reincarnation of Andre Johnson, right? And we can't get him more than 3 targets a game somehow. And if you look at the statistics on the field of where we were throwing to, it's like we were almost exclusively throwing him freaking hook and ladders on the outside the hash marks. And we couldn't throw a crossing route to him over the middle to save our lives.
Here's the thing. You also have a top quarterback and a top coach.
That's what I'm saying. For his first 2 years, he didn't really get a chance to develop. He was practically just running in circles out there, or really just running in straight lines. And it was very frustrating for him.
Here's the thing. With this offense, this is why it's going to be so beautiful. You have your slot guy in Tank Dell. You have your Alpha X in Nico Collins. And then you have your utility guy in Diggs.
Yep.
I mean, shoot, you can have 2 go routes and a freaking slant, and someone's going to be open. It's not like they play the same I don't want to say position because they're all receivers, but play the same like role, if that makes sense. Like,
yeah, you're not having 3 wideouts here.
Diggs, Collins, and Tank Dell are all specialized slot guys, or they're all just down the field. I mean, your specialty slot guy is Tank Dell, your long-range deep throw guy is Nico Collins, and your all-around guy is Diggs. When they can all do that well, like each of those rules, that's how I could see them being used is your short games are going to be mixing your dump offs and take down your slots for your slant routes, your digs, your corners, like all these different stuff within like 5-10 yards. And you're going to have your middle guy in digs and then your deep guy in home.
Well, and don't forget about play action opportunities with Schultz amongst all of that. So
yeah,
you can't, and then there's you got 3s and 4s behind them with the other guys that can develop too. So yeah, I mean, the options are plentiful. I think we can all agree it's just about actually getting actually making them efficient, right, and making the whole unit efficient. So the last thing I want to talk about of like this 3-headed monster of offseason acquirements is Danielle Hunter. Now this is a guy that, you know, he's coming off a 16.5 sack season in the Vikings in 2023. That's almost averaging a sack a game. So he was one of the top guys in the NFL. 10.5 sacks in 2022. Also had double digit sack years in 2019, 2018, and 2016. All of those with the Vikings. Now, keep in mind, this is with the departure of Jonathan Greenard. But I mean, look, in my initial opinion, before I let it go to you guys, This was honestly the first thing on my list that I was hoping the Texans would get, which is another true defensive end, right? That is a proven veteran pass rushing threat because of the fact that, look, we have an anchor as an edge rusher and defensive end with Will Anderson. We have to keep in mind 2 things. One, he's still learning the position as far as playing as a true hand-down defensive end, right? This is a guy that traditionally played middle linebacker and outside linebacker and occasionally with a hand down for stunts as like a defensive tackle. With Alabama, and was great at doing everything right. But rarely will you see a lot of his film as a true hand down, 5 technique to 7 technique defensive end in a 4-3, right? In any of his Alabama film. So he definitely had a completely different role than what he expected when he got to the Texans. It was basically the reverse of what we tried to get Clowney to do when we drafted him. If you can think about that, when we were still running a 3-4 with Wade Phillips. What I was really hoping is, look, we had a decent combo between Jonathan Greenard and Will Anderson, but we had 2 guys that were playing traditional 5-7 technique hand down defensive ends in a 4-3, that both of which are really more initially in regards to their experience and playing on an edge game, guys that were more like outside backers in a 3-4 and playing on 2 feet more than with a hand down. So I think the swapping out of getting I hate to see Greenard go, but you're getting a guy that in Danielle Hunter that is a true hand down 4-3 to whatever situation, but a true hand down defensive end with the pass rushing experience, with all the different kinds of ways to attack a passer, create an edge and not just have to win with just raw strength or just beating a guy off the line and edge rushing that way, which is really, for the first half of the season, as Anderson was kind of developing as a true hand down defensive end, those were mainly his two ways he could win, was just by either bull rushing a guy and beating with just raw power and strength, or edge rushing it by simply just beating the guy off the line and throwing a rip, right? Just the two most basic ways of defeating a pass block. And then as we saw him develop, we started to see a little bit more stuff thrown in there. But obviously, Anderson still has a lot of different moves to throw in his game to be able to create that edge whenever, you know, the tackle outsets, right? And then takes away that initial, you know, speed rush ability. And he's got his feet planted and, you know, he sets his feet right for the bull. When you have those two initial things taken away from you, what do you do from there? And that's what really truly makes a great defensive end. And Daniel Hunter is at the one of the guys at the top of the list of being able to defeat that situation where your first two best options are taken away. How do you create that edge to rush? You know, just keep running upfield. He has everything in his bag. So you have that kind of guy to play alongside Will Anderson, who's only going to get better as he continues to add more moves to his game to either create an edge to rush in or work back inside, you know, and not, you know, collapse the pocket without letting the quarterback roll out. So as we have one, you know, defensive superstar continue to develop in a brand new role for him relatively, you know, playing with a hand down, now you've got the veteran guy that, I mean, he's not necessarily, you know, a super old dude either, but he is a veteran. He's got over 7 years, eight years of absolute dominance at the defensive end position, and he can do it all as a traditional 4-3 hand down defensive end. So I think this is exactly what we needed on the defensive side of things. The only thing we could use more, some more defensive tackles, which we did get to.
You got Danico Autry, who's exactly fantastic.
Exactly. So that was a great acquirement. But I think you look at all the great playoff teams, right? They've all got two studs at defensive end or outside backer. They have two stud edge rushers, and they've got to be top count. Top of the talent, right? You've got to have at least two, because if you only have one, you know, we saw what happened to Nick Bosa when he had Chase Young along his side. He was still suffering. But then once you, as a premier, like their number one guy, but then you add in Chase Young and all of a sudden the whole thing works, right? They were really close to coming home with the whole thing. But that was really a big difference maker to the whole defense when you add in that second weapon of, hey, if you double this guy will make you pay. So now you're having to put seven in the box.
It's typical, you know, J.J. Watt, Jadeveon Clowney type.
Well, whenever the rare occasion where Clowney was healthy, but yes, that's what we were going for, right? But in this day and age, with how much better pass blocking schemes have gotten and how much better, you know, your top offensive lines have gotten, it's become not just a recommendation, but a requirement of, if you have one really good guy, you've got to have someone else that can make him pay, right?
To take off,
so
the double.
What are your, I mean, from now that I'm done with my little half monologue there, what, Bert, I'll start with you, Bert, and I'll go to Thomas. What are your thoughts on the Daniel Hunter acquisition? Do you think it has an immediate effect in being able to, you know, make people pay for doubling Anderson, or do you think people are going to double Danielle more and then Anderson gets the benefit?
But before you start talking, it's Daniel, not Danielle.
Yeah, it's Daniel.
Okay. Well, spell that freaking Danielle. I don't know. Look, he's been over Minnesota. I don't give a piss. Fine, it's Daniel. All right, go ahead.
You better start getting his name right. He's going to be playing for us. So I mean,
it's been less than a week, boys. All right, we'll figure it out.
Actually, I think it's been like a week and a half. But whatever. Yeah.
All right, just throw me under the bus, both tires, then, Bert. Okay. All right.
I'm just
give me your freaking opinion.
Letting the audience know. You know, I like it. I mean, what else is there to say, really? I mean, when you pair up, you know, one really good defensive edge with another, there's only so many men on the offensive line with what you can do, right? And then you go out and you get a player that, like Danico Autry, like I mentioned beforehand, he's going to demand some attention as well. I would like to see another defensive tackle, but you can only address so much in a free agency. And I mean, by all means, I mean, Nick has already done boatloads this offseason. So
literally broken records. So yeah.
I think in the maybe in the draft that might be a possible acquisition, addressing some offensive front problems, addressing some defensive front problems. But I mean, there's not much to say, frankly. I mean, two Pro Bowl players at edges. It's pretty hard to complain with that.
Yeah, and they're both, and you know, one is a true hand down guy, you know, and is comfortable doing what he's already going to be asked to do, and one is only going to get better.
Absolutely, and I mean,
but you have flexibility with both. They're both great athletes.
And I was about to
hand down or hand up.
And that's the other thing about Denico Autry as well. I mean, he's played, you know, head up on the center and a true nose technique. He's also played more of an edge technique as well. So there's a lot of things you can do with him as well. I mean, utility, especially on the defensive front, only adds to what you can do defensively. And I'm sure D'Amico is very happy with all the options that he has with those players.
Okay. All right. Well, final question is for you, Thomas. I think this kind of goes without saying, but I'm just going to ask the question for the sake of it and then let you roll with it. Of the big three acquisitions we got in free agency between Hunter, Mixon, and Diggs, which do you think is the most significant immediate impact for next season?
Oh, gosh. That's hard.
You got to pick one Lambo, brother.
Yeah, I know. You could go off in different ways. I think personally, why? Because he opens up the offense a lot more than Singletary and Pierce did.
So you're saying Mixon?
Yeah.
Okay, got it.
You have receivers who were going to open up the run game, but you didn't have that one. And you could look at the end of the season. I mean, Singletary ended up having like 700 or something yards in the last like 10 weeks of the season or something crazy.
Yep.
So you have that guy, but then you upgraded that guy. You just added another receiver, so it's going to take the top off more for Mixon, you know? But then you can look at it from a defensive perspective and say, oh, now we have that star that can coach up Will Anderson, and it could be that dance partner on the other side of the line, you know? And not to mention, cap-wise, he could have gotten a lot more. I mean, he signed for $49 million. I mean, fully guaranteed. But yep. I mean, 24.5 a year, like for a 16 sack guy,
yep,
who was the only rusher on his team that was competent at all, and still had 16.5 sacks after getting double teamed. I mean, that's crazy. I mean, if they really wanted to, they could go out and sign Xavier Howard tomorrow and completely cancel out this entire like league. Because you saw Xavier Howard said he could take a pay cut. He would love to take a pay cut to come from the Houston and play for the Texans. Now with this would have to be an even bigger pay cut where it's probably on the minimum.
Yeah.
But I mean, to get a Super Bowl? I mean, you just got released from a $590 million contract.
He already got paid.
Quoting him,
he already got his Brinks truck. He's good. He wants a ring.
Exactly. So you pull him in. Maybe you draft safety.
Maybe
you draft corner and sign Simmons from the Broncos safety.
Who knows? But
Texans are going to be fun to watch this year. I'm super stoked and can't wait for week one.
Absolutely. Yep. Guys, thank you guys for hopping on. This was, long overdue, Texans offseason podcast. Like I said, I was waiting to hit the big red button on this, but we kept getting acquisition after acquisition and more rumors. I was just waiting whenever the big red button needed to be hit. And after I got that text today, I was like, okay, today's the day. Finally talking about the Texans.
And the draft hasn't even started yet.
I know. So we got the draft coming up. So my plan is we'll come back and talk more Texans with Dylan Delgado, do a draft preview, may even cover like the entire draft as a whole, not just for the Texans, but for sure going to try to get him back on the show pretty soon as our friend of the show, Texans insider per se. And so be looking for that to come up in about another couple weeks and whatnot. Thank you guys for listening. We'll see you guys next time.